Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited because today we have with us Keith Harrington, co-founder and chief operating officer of Novel Capital. Keith, welcome to the podcast.
Christian, thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
Always two of us. So why don't we start with Novel Capital? Let's talk about the firm's focus, please.
So we are a capital provider, providing capital to early stage SaaS and software businesses around the country. Basically, what we do is we will take a company's fundamental data, accounting data, banking data, use that to ascertain whether we can provide capital. If we can, we will give them terms in 24 to 48 hours and then hopefully be able to provide them a loan of up to $5 million to help them grow their businesses. Our whole point is to provide additional optionality for founders out there. It's very difficult to raise capital. I've raised capital, you've raised capital. We know how hard that road is. I used to be a VC. I know very well how hard that road is because I used to be a VC and I have also raised venture capital. And one of the things that is just fundamental to how we think is entrepreneurs deserve optionality. You shouldn't always go raise venture money. It just doesn't always make sense. But when you've got a business that's growing and you know what you're going to get when you invest a dollar in your machine, a solution like what we've developed can really help you build your business much more quickly.
Great. And you, I know your co-founder, who's you found the company with?
Yeah, my co-founder is Carlos Santaquera. He was a K-12 entrepreneur before we got together to build Novel. He founded a company called NetChemia. That was kind of like an HR software system for the K-12 space and ended up selling it to Vista Equity Partners. So I think we bring to the table as a partnership or as co-founders, you know, I've always been in the funding space and he's always been an operator. So we have, you know, two fundamentally different points of view coming at the same common goal. And for that reason, I think we've been able to design some really effective tools for entrepreneurs.
So, I mean, that's awesome. And shout out to Novel because Finstrat Management is a client and we've had experience.
You happen to be a customer. Yes.
Yeah. So I can give you a ringing endorsement, but let's unpack it for our audience. Yeah. Obviously both of you have a lot of experience with financing and also there are a whole host of lenders out there. So, you know, great to hear your philosophy on providing this service and then how it's manifested when you actually are cutting checks for businesses that are in the market.
Yeah, you know, our philosophy is it's pretty basic and it really gets back to that idea that we should be providing entrepreneurs with optionality. It is fundamentally one of the hardest things that you can do to build a business from scratch. And as you're doing that, if you decide to take that path, at some point, you're going to realize that you need to raise capital. If you're not the right kind of business, you're never going to raise capital from a bank. If you're not the right kind of business, you're never going to raise capital from a VC. And if you're not at the right stage of your business, then maybe VC or banks don't make sense, but maybe they will later, or maybe they did earlier. So the way we see it is this is incredibly complex landscape for entrepreneurs to figure out. And our goal is to really simplify it and say, look, if you're a business that has this much revenue and you're growing like this, then we have a financial tool that you could use that's super flexible. It costs less than other options like equity, and you can use it to grow your business. And the more that we can do that, the more entrepreneurs that we can help in that way, the more businesses are growing around the country. We've provided almost $100 million to about 135 companies in the last 3 years. Wow. And, you know, if you think about it, when Carlos and I first started this, the whole point was entrepreneurs need another option, and we've been able to build something that, I mean, we're nowhere near the scale of our ambition. We're really just at the beginning, but we've been able to have a real impact, and that's really gratifying. And then you asked me, what did you ask me? How does it manifest? How do we do it?
Yeah. So, and I'll just, if I, I'll do a tiny bit of leading the witness. So one of the things I think about is your platform, a bit unique. And then you also talked about turnaround time on diligence, which is, again, a bit unique.
Yeah. Yeah. So, when we first started, we did everything manually. It was Keith and Carlos and a spreadsheet, and eventually Keith, Carlos, a spreadsheet and an intern. And it was a really long process to meet us and then get to the point where we had a, you know, we were able to provide terms, we were able to provide capital, but we learned so much so fast that we decided, you know what, we want to have a massive impact. Let's build a big business. And as part of that, we ourselves raised venture capital so that we could build a platform that would help us get from, you know, this manual approach to underwriting and deciding to a much more streamlined, much more automatic, much more systematic approach. And so now what our platform does is it pulls in data from our customers and it drops it into models and tells us, you know, this customer isn't quite ready for a loan. And then we can have that conversation, or this company is ready for a loan. And then we can kind of configure the terms from there and get to and get hopefully get to a point where we can provide capital and help that company. But yeah, it's gone from a very long sales cycle to we can provide terms in 24 to 48 hours. We can close a loan with a company as fast as they want, really. It's basically, do you have all the data you need for us to get comfortable with sort of the deeper diligence stuff? We've closed loans in as fast as a week, usually takes about three.
Wow. So yeah. Obviously early stage companies, one of their advantages, speed. And yeah. So did you find that this was more, hey, the technology is yielding us efficiencies that we can make decisions faster? Or was it, you know what, there are options in the market. And if I can give you insights, you know, then this is going to be one of Novel's competitive advantages.
It's the latter. Speed in and of itself is not super interesting. I mean, you could go out and find a dozen capital providers that'll give you a term sheet in a day and capital in a week. That in and of itself is not, I mean, I think it's barely interesting. What is interesting and what we prefer to do, we do that, but that's sort of like table stakes. We can move at your speed, right? And we're going to move at the speed that you want us to move. We're here to help, not to slow you down. But I think the thing that we bring to the table that is much more interesting is that we have developed a set of insights and experiences that we're able to share through our platform. So our platform gives we have a CEO dashboard that gives some metrics the CEOs can look at. Our platform can provide valuation estimates for companies that are trying to think about, is now the right time to go get equity? Our platform can actually connect companies that are looking for equity to venture capital investors. We have a product called Venture Match that allows us to do that. My co-founder and I are both Kauffman Fellows, so we have this great network of VCs around the world. So it's very easy for us to make those connections when it makes sense for a company. So for us, the financial product, the loan, it's critical, but we really like to think about it as packaged. It's wrapped up in insights and data that we can provide that entrepreneurs don't have the time and in many cases the experience to even know that they're supposed to be thinking about or asking. You know this, Christian. It's such a weird and esoteric market, entrepreneurial capital markets, right? Like, you have to know really weird stuff, and unless you come out of early stage finance like a VC, you don't know the questions to ask. So we think it's partially leveling the playing field for the CEOs that we work with. Here are the metrics that you should probably be paying attention to. Here's how we look at your business. We share with those companies. Here's how we underwrite you. Here are the risks that we see. And here are some suggestions to help you button up those risks. But yeah, for us, it's insights and helping companies grow in addition to the capital.
So I'm going to ask you then to comment on some of those metrics. Before you do, it probably makes most sense to unpack why SaaS, which you mentioned at the beginning.
Well, It's very easy to underwrite SaaS, right? If you think about the recurring nature of the revenue, it's very easy to get comfortable fairly quickly that revenue is going to be there down the road to help you make sure that any loan that we provide is going to get paid back. So I don't want to say it's easy, but it is easier than, a business model that doesn't have recurring revenue as a major component of its economics. We do non-SaaS lending. We will provide capital to tech-enabled services businesses, software businesses that aren't SaaS, but they do have a component that's recurring and that we can get comfortable with. That's really how our credit models work. They latch on to the recurring part of the revenue stream, and that's what we really underwrite. So it's not easy. It's just easier.
Easier. So come full circle. Metrics. Now that you're looking at businesses with recurring revenue, or some of the tips that are generally top of mind.
For us, look, we're pretty simple. We think there's no use in overcomplicating underwriting and analysis and diligence of a company. So the most critical metrics are: how much revenue do you have? At what rate are you growing? How much of that revenue is recurring? Are you profitable? It's okay if you're not. Is there a path to get you to sustainability or profitability? So burn rate, and then CAC and LTV. And we go deeper on some of those things in the model, but we're really looking at, hey, you've got a revenue stream. Given what it looks like today and the pace at which you're adding new business, how long can we really make a loan? Can we feel comfortable providing capital for 2 years? Because you've got the history of actually running your machine and seeing the flywheel work. And if that's the case, then it gets to be a fairly easy decision for us. But we don't, we think that maintaining simplicity is really important, which is why we look at those top level metrics. We go deeper, but those top level metrics for us are the most important ones.
So really valuable to hear you call those out. And sometimes maybe it's intuitive for the founders in the audience. And it probably goes a long way of saying is that if for a lender like Novel, if you're gonna go seek financing, think about the tremendous benefit of having your financials bummed up so that they can answer the question, hey, how much cash do you have in the bank? How much you've been burning? How much are you devoting to acquiring new clients? And like I said, obviously FinStrat's in a unique position because this is what we do for a living. But I'd love to get your perspective. It's like how often when you're looking when you're doing underwriting, do you have to go back and say, hey, this is close, but there's some things you have to address?
Most of the time. What we find is, you can imagine what the most common reason for us to have to say, ah, look, wait, we just can't do anything for you right now is runway, right? That is without a doubt the most common reason. And I think about that in a couple of ways. One, it probably means if you had come to us sooner, there may have been something that we could do, and then runway wouldn't be a concern, and you could continue to grow. A lot of times, we'll see a company with 3 or 4 months of runway, and they're having to like shrink their growth spending because their runway is really running short, and they don't know what to do. And those are very difficult. Those loans are very difficult for us to close. There's just a lot of risk. To come to us earlier, you have to have the insight that you need to come to us earlier, right? And that's an insight that's usually shared by an investor, an advisor, an entrepreneur who's been around the block and just knows that. But you don't necessarily know that right out of the gate, like, oh, I need to be planning my capital, 12 to 18 months in advance. So if I'm gonna have 4 months of runway in January, I probably need to be talking to lenders a year before. So I think there's a lot of capital planning and financial planning that's, again, it's esoteric and it's hard, and it's a complicated thing to figure out when you're also just trying to run the business. That for us, those are the things that we see sort of cause us to have to say no thanks, more often than not.
Interesting. So I'm going to take a little tiny pivot here and ask you to put your founder hat on. So,
Ah, yeah.
Carlos, you are now building Novel. Without revealing any trade secrets, two things I'd love to unpack. One, the fun side of the house. If you could, whatever experience you can share of what it's involved with raising capital. And then also, just would love to hear how the two of you think about just growing the business. And two topics that I know our audience would love to learn a little bit more about.
I love talking about this. So raising capital for us, I have to break it down into two different sort of categories, right? We need to raise venture capital to build the technology and build the business. So we've raised about $15 million of venture money in the last 3 or so years. Our last round we closed actually about a year ago. Fantastic investors, Ulu Ventures, Ignea Partners, Matterscale. We've just got these phenomenal investors. We're very fortunate. But I will tell you that basically all the capital raising stories could fall under the category of me for or of the hardest thing I've ever done professionally. So last year we launched a capital raise in 2023 when and we're a fintech lender. And I don't know if anybody remembers 2023, but nobody liked fintech. And the only thing they disliked more were fintech lenders. So timing, not great. So we hit the market and it was hard, really hard. We ended up getting it done, but it was a slog to get that capital raised. It took, I wish I knew the numbers off the top of my head, but I mean, we ran a ton of meetings. Carlos and I run a very tight fundraising process. It is just a sales process. We actually have a, here are the number of meetings that we're going to have with an investor before they're going to give us a term sheet. We're very, very tight. And we ran a very tight process and it still took, I don't know, twice as long as we thought it would. And we're pretty realistic about fundraising too. We've been around the block.
Great insight.
What's that?
I said great insight. It's
Yeah,
great.
it just
You're
it
not the
takes.
only one, audience.
Yeah, no, it's hard. Raising capital is hard. And I used to actually teach a class on fundraising. And it is incredibly hard, but it's also very simple. And it's simple in that it's just a process. And once you get your process down, and if your process includes modifying your pitch, modifying your collateral as you're getting feedback from investors, as long as you're doing that, you're going to be successful. But you have to keep running the process and you cannot stop. And so that's one category of capital that we raise. But then of course we loan money. So we have another kind of capital that we raise. So we've gone out and raised $120 million in debt capital to provide to the companies that we are funding. And that was also with the first time we raised debt capital. I mean, I'll just admit it, we didn't know what we were doing. We had a really good idea. Carlos and I had raised and run a fund originally doing this. And so, we'd kind of tested it. We had this, okay, let's really go build this thing. And we went out and talked to a bunch of advisors and they're all like, hey, you should raise a credit facility. You gotta get a line of credit for this. It'll be cheaper capital. And go raise that. And that took a year. Actually, when we closed the credit facility, it's 53 weeks from the first conversation to the closing date with the lender that we chose. October 8th, 2019 to October 15th, 2020. And I remember that because it was a hard process. I learned a lot. I can't even express to you how much I learned. I don't know if I'm any smarter, but the amount of diligence that we went through, the scrutiny that we went through, it took us from like a pretty small team with some track record to a much more sophisticated operation very quickly. It was hard, but I was very grateful to go through that process.
And what are some of the key takeaways that are top of mind?
From the raising debt, I think it's not too dissimilar from raising equity. The thing that is most important is across any kind of capital that you raise, you have to be comfortable with the human being who's writing the checks. You have to be comfortable that that person shares your values, shares your vision, or at least respects your vision and isn't going to try to get in the way of that. And we apply that that filter to equity conversations that we've had, and we've been very fortunate to raise capital from people who share our vision, share our values, and are very supportive of us. And we brought that same philosophy to raising the credit facility. We talked to a bunch of people who were super transactional, and they were just financial engineers. The lender that we ended up partnering with, CIM, they exist to help companies like Novel. And it was so clear in the first few conversations. It was like, I think we should work with these guys. They understand our challenges. They've helped other platforms grow. It was so in that way, it is very much the same as raising equity. I did have to learn a new language though. When we raised the debt facility, I remember there were a couple of times when Carlos and I were on initial calls with lenders and they would ask us for something that I didn't know what it was. And I'd be like, yeah, okay. Yeah. We're going to get that to you probably early next week. And I'd type a note and then we'd get off the call. I'd be like, what is that? Carlos would be like, I don't know. So, anyway, I probably shouldn't admit that. But sure it cracks me up. It cracks me up still.
Oh, well, that's cool. All right. So, well, that's a great story. And, you know, it is inspiring to be able to go out over your skis and do something you haven't done before. Yeah. And then obviously see it be successful, which is great. Yeah. Just for sake of recording, so are you in the first debt facility or is it revolving or how does that work?
Yeah, it revolves. it'll go. We'll probably use this same debt facility for another, I would say 2 years would be my guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. And so then other thing I mentioned then was back to which your founder had on. You know, one of the reoccurring topics that comes up on the podcast is just client acquisition. What are different tactics you employ? And again, I don't know, not without revealing any secret trade secret sauce. You know, just love to think about how you think about cold outreach, you know, warm, anything that you think is relevant to talk about.
Yeah, you know, you have to build an engine that has a blend, right? You know, when we first started, we got very, very good at sort of cold outbound, and we're still very good at that. And then over the last 2-ish years, we've really started to get better at mixing in inbound and partnerships and referrals and events. You know, we're kind of in an interesting space in that when we build top of funnel, a lot of the companies that we want to talk to may not be a good fit for our capital, right? So it's an interesting thing because, you know, if you think about it, if the board were to say, you guys need to improve your conversion rates, the other way to look at that is you need to take more risk. And so we're very careful about when we have conversations about conversion rates, we're very careful about what does that really mean? You know, are we having a risk conversation or are we having a conversation about we're getting to the wrong companies at the wrong time? And so for our customer acquisition engine is, it's complicated for that reason. But I think, you know, for us, there's a lot of, like it makes it a lot easier if we actually are talking to someone, right? Rather than just the standard outbound approach. So, you know, events are very good for us because we have the opportunity to actually be in front of an entrepreneur and talk to them. And opportunities like this as well. I mean, you know, when an entrepreneur hears us talking about what we're doing, it helps them get more comfortable. Taking capital is a very personal thing. So it's rare that a company will be contacted via outbound. They're going to sign up on the platform and then money's going to be deployed. They want to see who's lending them money. It's just human nature. So for us, we've had to learn how to mix that in, and make it part of our approach, which is how we're geared anyway. I wish I had like, customer acquisition, tips and tricks. we just view it as it's hand-to-hand combat. We're out there every day trying to find the right entrepreneurs to talk to.
Interesting. So I'm hearing it sounds like it's a very much an iterative process, and you're
Oh
constantly
yes. Oh
trying
yeah.
out different tactics and, appreciating that what worked yesterday may not work again tomorrow.
That is true in customer acquisition, and it is true in every other aspect of the business, and in everybody's business, right? We're constantly looking at metrics. We're constantly looking at data coming in and evaluating, okay, does this mean we need to change something? Does this mean we need to modify our approach? That's just the nature of how that's the only way, I think, to continue growing a business and be successful.
Love it. Well, we're also fortunate in that you can weigh in on the current interest rate environment. And so, for everyone's benefit, we're recording this early Q1 2025. Based on feedback that I've seen from the Federal Reserve, it sounds like some governors want to start cutting, some want to maintain. We'd love to get your perspective and what you think is in the cards for this year.
Well, I love that you think I have a qualification to speak on this topic. Here's what I will say. I would love to see interest rates come down, because I think it's good for everybody. I think it's good for business just in general. I think it's good for us. I think it's good for our customers. And so for that reason, the more we can see those interest rates come down by a half a point this year or more, the better. I just think it becomes much easier for customers. For if you're a business, it's a lot easier to take on capital if it's cheaper, and especially if it's a loan. So, what we're always in favor of interest rates coming down. Now, whether they will, I have no idea. But I'm like everybody else, pretty curious about it, and certainly supportive. I don't know anybody who says that we shouldn't lower interest rates, but maybe I just run in a weird circle.
All right. So with that, then let me ask. I like you. My background is in investments, finance. We both think about risk. And one of the things that you see a lot of managers do is hedge risk. And so, I'd love to know: do you take any active positions? For sake of example, interest rate puts. Or anything like that in order to manage your downside.
No, we don't. It's a great question. The way we manage our downside is strictly through our underwriting. We rely very heavily on our ability to assess risk and downside on each individual business and on the portfolio as a whole. And we make adjustments. We'll make adjustments in terms of risk aperture, but we do not do any sophisticated hedging.
Okay. Yeah, it's just
We
you hear.
probably should.
Well, a lot of times it depends how much the insurance costs.
It is ex that exp that insurance is expensive. The other thing is, as interest rates go up and down, our costs go up and down too. So we can, just by the way that we've designed the business and designed our products, we sort of mi mitigate the risk of volatility. But we've talked about, there are a couple of different kinds of financial instruments that maybe we should consider, but we haven't done it yet.
It's a fun topic.
Yeah.
Again, for benefit of our audience, I think if anything, it kind of uncovers just this idea that, it's not just that, oh, hey, Keith has a lot of money. No, Keith has investors of his own. He has
Oh, yeah.
responsible
Oh,
stakeholders,
yeah.
and they have to look at this at the lens of risk. And not only if what's taking place in the market, but individual
Yep.
companies that they're considering partnering with.
No, that's right. And I think it's interesting that you bring that up. I think one of the things that, and every founder out there who's raised capital will get this when I say it, but when you have gone out and raised money from other people, then the responsibility that you feel to turn that capital into what they're expecting you to turn it into is incredibly heavy, right? So we have this we have debt capital that our job is to make sure that we don't lose money and they get the return that they're supposed to get. And we have equity capital and our job is to deliver a multiple of what they've invested. And that can be a very, that's a very weighty thing to walk around with. And like I said, every founder who's ever raised capital knows that and understands it. And it's a two-sided thing because it's weighty, but it's also, I'm very grateful for the privilege that people trust me enough that they let me do what I'm doing. It's a very cool thing, but it's very weighty too.
100%. You called out for founders who've raised money. I'll add on to that. For founders who've not yet raised money, please appreciate what you're sharing. And that's, hey, you have return expectations of your own that you have to manage. And so if you can go into a conversation with yourself or other investors, you know, for the first time understanding that's the case, I'd argue you're at an advantage.
Agreed.
Keith, it's been an awesome podcast. Whole great number of insights in here. Before we wrap up, if you had an opportunity to go back to your younger self and have a conversation, what would you share?
Oh man, so much, Christian, so much. You know what? There's so many things, but what's coming to mind right now is that something that I have come to appreciate a lot about trying to build something like Novel is that it is so much about relationships. You know, it's about sales and running a process and all of that stuff, but at the end of the day, the relationships that you build from your youngest days until, you know, until you're old like me, they're just the most precious thing. And across the different aspects of your life. One of the things that I have been surprised by in my professional life is how much I value the relationships that I've built. And those relationships that I have with people in my professional world are so precious to me. I didn't anticipate that. I just didn't know that that was going to be the way that it was. So if I was going to go back and tell my younger self something, it would be just always invest in the relationship. Always invest in the relationship.
Love it. Yeah. I mean, if you think about, you know, especially if there's consensus that you get out what you put in, I mean, it usually makes a case to, you know, but make sure you're carving out time for the people in your life, especially, you know, for better or for worse, you think about it, we spend more time with our coworkers than we do our family.
That's true.
You know, well, Keith, thank you. Great podcast. And for our audience again, Keith Harrington, co-founder and chief operating officer of Novel Capital. Really appreciate your time, Keith. Thank you.
Thank you, Christian. Really had a good time.
Awesome. And that's another episode of the Innovators Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor who would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.